This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio tonight. We are your UFO news authority. This is Alejandro Rojas, and I will be your host this evening. We have another sensational show. I always get excited about our guests. It's just fun to talk UFOs. And that's what's great about the show. You get to talk with some incredible people. And tonight we are talking with George Filer. We tried to do this a few weeks ago, and unfortunately there was a mix-up. There's a technical difficulty where somehow somebody didn't want us to talk to him because the cell phone just wouldn't work from our site. Very strange technical issue. Luckily, Antonio and I had a lot to talk about, and so we talked about stuff. But we've got George Filer, and this is excellent. If you're not aware of who he was an Air Force intelligence officer in the Air Force for a long time. While serving in the Air Force, while he was on board an aircraft tanker over the UK, he was asked to go check out a UFO. And then later on in his career, he was asked to brief some generals about an alien being shot on the tarmac at Fort Dix. So crazy stories, really interesting stuff. He's a great guy. You might have seen him on the Disclosure Project. A lot of you are aware of the press conference that Dr. Stephen Greer did in 2001, where he had a lot of credible people come in front of the Washington. Fun guy. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Other things coming up. Well, let me talk about next week's guest, which is really cool. We have another of the hard-to-get guests that nobody else has because we are so cool. Just blows me away how cool we are sometimes. We have the Honorable Paul Hellyer. He's someone that you might have seen. He spoke at the X conference a couple times, I think, actually. But he used to be the Minister of Defense for Canada. Holy smokes. That's like, you know, if Cheney comes here, we're working on it. Maybe we'll get him there. He's not actually my favorite person, Dick Cheney. But, you know, if he wants to come on the show and talk UFOs, we'll have him. But this is a cool person. Paul Hellyer is actually very much into peace and space. He's gotten into, you know, sustainability and this whole movement on trying to save the planet. And one of the things that he's very concerned about is the U.S. hiding information about UFOs, and if indeed we are trying to shoot down UFOs. In fact, he saw the book The Day After Roswell. He read that from Colonel Corso. We've talked a lot about that before. And then he called a general in the U.S. to say, is this stuff for real? And this general said, yes, sir, it actually is for real. And so he was floored, and he became very interested in this stuff, and he's been somewhat outspoken about the need for the secrecy to end and the United States to share this information. What's incredible about Hellyer is that he speaks at a policy level. I mean, this is the upper echelons of the government, a very influential government that is just north of us here. If you're not aware of where Canada is, some people might not be, unfortunately. And, you know, speaking about the implications it has in government and why governments need to know is really exciting, and it's great to talk about. And Paula Harris did a wonderful interview you can find on YouTube where he talks about this that just really got me excited. It's one of the things I've really one of the interviews I think is really important out there. So we're going to have our own interview. It's going to be spectacular. You're going to want to be here next week. Other things coming up? Well, in a couple weekends, Maureen and I, and maybe more open minds people, we'll see, are going to be at the Bay Area Expo. And that's going to be a lot of fun. Our good buddy Ruben Uriarte, who we went and saw out in San Leandro recently at the UFO X Fest, is going to be emceeing that event as well. And there's going to be a lot of great people. George Norrie is going to be there. Leslie Keen is going to be there. And she's going to have James Peniston from the Rendlesham Forest, who wrote in her book. She's going to have Charles Hall, who wrote from the book. They're all going to be there. Very much like our conference, because guess what? We confirmed we're going to – well, we've 95% confirmed, I should say, Leslie Keene is going to be at our conference. And Linda Howe also. We're going to have a lot of the women in ufology, which is really important, I think, because sometimes in a male-dominated field, the women get overlooked. But we're going to have a lot of the women in ufology at our UFO Congress in February. But not to get mixed up, October, the holiday weekend, that's the Bay Area Expo. Come and see us there. Of course, that's in the Bay Area, San Jose. And then, again, come and see us in February at the UFO Congress, ufocongress.com. Many of you have gotten our new magazine, the fifth issue, that focuses on the Rendlesham Forest and different crash cases. And we've gotten some fourth issue. I get confused because we just finished writing the fifth issue, or we're in the process of it. Fourth issue just came out on Rendlesham Forest, and we've gotten some good feedback on that. Thank you all very much for letting us know, you know, what you like out of it and what you don't. Luckily, we've had very few of the latter. But let us know so we can keep improving that magazine. And I think we did a great job with covering all of the different areas of the Rendlesham Forest, along with a lot of other stories that were really interesting, including the spirals, the mysterious Norway spirals. However, if you want to stay up to date on UFO news, then visit our website, because we look at the conventional media headlines throughout the world talking about UFOs, and there are many, many stories on UFOs out there. In fact, so many that we had to bring on our professional to share us with us all of this information, our news correspondent, Jason McClellan. Jason, thank you for joining us and giving us some heads up on UFO news.
Thank you for having me, Alejandro. Greetings, Dr. Rojas, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, October 11, 2010. To reiterate a story from a couple weeks ago, a retired U.S. Air Force officer, Stanley A. Fulham, recently wrote a book entitled Challenges of Change that predicts a massive UFO display on October 13th. The former officer had a lifelong association with a senior NORAD intelligence officer who provided him a wealth of historical data relating to NORAD's experience with aliens and UFOs. This predicted UFO display is said to involve fleets of UFOs appearing above Earth's major cities. Not a hostile action, but an engagement to help humans avoid destroying Earth. That's just a couple days away, Alejandro.
Did he say how he came about this information?
I don't recall. I haven't read anything that said that he specifically says how he came to that date.
I just thought of that because I hadn't seen anything either.
But I know that after providing that date, he then says that if it doesn't happen, of course, the aliens could have decided to call it off.
October 16th?
13th.
Okay.
So
that's like a couple days away.
This is the 11th, so two
Holy
days away.
Holy cow, people. This is going
to
be
Keep your
great.
Eyes to the skies. See if anything happens. But we've seen these predictions before, so who knows. But we'll watch. A newly discovered Earth-sized planet may be capable of sustaining life. The planet, known as Gliese 581g, is 20 light-years away from Earth and is the first Earth-sized planet to be found in a star's region where planet temperatures can sustain liquid water on its surface, that is, the habitable zone. The planet's discoverers believe the chances of finding life on Gliese 581g are good. If the planet does contain life, and this life is intelligent, then what programming might these residents be seeing on their televisions? Well, radio and television signals travel at the speed of light. With Gliese 581g being 20 light years away from Earth, our radio and television transmissions from 20 years ago are just reaching the planet. This means that extraterrestrials could be watching the Arsenio Hall Show and Cheers, or listening to Sinead O'Connor and Belle Biv DeVoe. This assumes, however, that the inhabitants of Gliese 581g have the technology to receive and interpret Earth signals. So could Earthlings watch 20-year-old TV from an alien planet like Gliese 581g? Again, it comes down to technology. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is an organization on Earth searching for incoming signals from other planets. Seth Shostak, SETI senior astronomer, told Fox News, in order to understand anything that ET might be sending to us, we'll have to build far larger instruments to look for the modulation of his signal. If residents of Galiza 581G are able to watch our decades-old television shows, let's hope they have a sense of humor when it comes to watching reruns of shows like ALF and Mork and Mindy.
But they're going to be able to listen to Belle Biv DeVoe. That's kind of cool. I like that. Poison. That girl is poison. Well, and I think another important thing that you've done here, which is important for people to realize, is Gliese is how you say this, right?
From what I've been able to determine, Gliese is
Yeah, and you've actually researched this, and we're going to need to know this because these are our neighbors. We got to know how to pronounce our neighbor's home planet.
I wouldn't call them neighbors, being 20 light years away. But
That's nothing in the grand scheme of things.
Well, let's figure out how to get there first.
We're doing what we can, one step at a time.
It is exciting news, though, with the discovery of this planet and being Earth-like.
Yeah.
So we'll see what more they find out about it.
And conventional scientists thinking that nearly 100%, some of them have said there's 100% chance there's life on this planet.
Absolutely.
Because it's in the Goldilocks zone, it's got water. That's really exciting.
On to Russian news. We seem to have a lot of Russian news lately.
Yeah.
Some metal uncovered in Vladivostok, Russia could suggest extraterrestrial visitation. An aluminum plate was discovered by a crew that was doing initial excavation work for a bridge construction project. And while humans have been using aluminum for a century, this plate is estimated to be approximately 2,000 years old. The plate was sent to St. Petersburg Institute of Nuclear Physics for detailed analysis. The plate was found to contain 97% aluminum with traces of calcium, iron, copper, samarium, lead, and tungsten. The Institute was unable to locate any similar alloys in their database.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So extraterrestrials came and left one of their plates.
And an aluminum plate. Of course, that could have been a hubcap or something. But still, that's terribly interesting.
It is.
It's a really exciting story. I mean, it's so old, and aluminum, something manufactured. Hopefully, you know, this isn't one of those stories, because I've seen those before that come like from Russian news and it's just not followed up. The Russian government or whoever doesn't follow it up, or maybe it gets buried. I don't know.
Right. And, you know, I know we've been using, we think we know how long we've been using aluminum, but, you know, their ancient civilizations, it's just incredible what they were able to do with technology and the innovations they came up with, you know, like the Romans using plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? But this is fascinating, and it's cool to hear that they unearthed something that is this old and apparently is something that we didn't use back then.
Right.
So you're right. Hopefully they do some research, and we have an update to that story.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an update to another story we've covered. Maslan Othman, the head of the United Nations Office of Outer Space Affairs, says she is not about to become the UN's UFO ambassador. At the Royal Society conference in England last week, Othman said, "I think it's cool, but no, I am not about to be appointed the ambassador to aliens." Earlier reports claimed that the UN had appointed Othman to the new position, but the Office for Outer Space Affairs later told Fox News that the whole story was nonsense. Interesting, the whole back and forth that's gone on with this story since the initial announcement.
Yeah, that's weird that the Telegraph was the first paper, right? And I mean, that's a big paper. They don't get things wrong. So did she say something that the UN felt was out of line? Who knows? I mean, would she be the person? If the UN were to appoint someone, maybe that's true and the UN just didn't want to go there and be made to look funny.
Right.
So I don't know what happened there, but
who knows? But because of all the back and forth, it certainly opens the door to a lot of speculation.
Yeah, and a lot of people made so much news about the first concept or the first piece of information that came out about her being the ambassador to ETs that they kind of neglected to follow up and read the stories. Where the UN said that wasn't the case, and she herself said that wasn't the case. So a lot of people still believe that that's the case, the UN appointed someone.
Yep. Residents of Port Angeles, Washington, called in UFO reports to local police recently, describing a bright, shiny UFO in the morning sky. Officials reassured callers that what they were seeing was simply the planet Jupiter. This has been happening a lot lately because Jupiter is making its closest approach to Earth in 47 years, making it appear extremely bright in the sky.
Yeah, I was taking pictures with my cool camera and my new camera and with my telephoto, and I got the moons in Jupiter. And I was talking to my cousin, and he said, I don't know how this could be the case because Jupiter's so bright, that if your eyes are good enough, you could see Jupiter's moons with your eyes, supposedly. So you have to have some incredible...
I have terrible eyes, so there's no chance of that happening for me.
Yeah. I looked, and when I crossed my eyes, I saw two Jupiters, but I don't think it was like Jupiter and its moon. I think that was something else going on there.
Could be. But you're right. You go outside, that sucker is bright right now.
Yeah, it's incredibly bright. We were just looking at it, and it's cool. I mean, there's so many of the planets that look so incredibly bright. And people are just think, how could a planet look that bright up there?
Right. And it can be tricky when you're watching it in the sky, when the sky is cloudy.
Mm-hmm.
If there are clouds moving, it looks like the object is changing sizes and blinking.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky one. The case of Swiss UFO contactee Billy Myers reportedly coming to the classroom. Myers' U.S. media representative, Michael Horn, is bringing the case to schools, colleges, and universities in the form of a multimedia presentation that will contain physical evidence from the Meyer case, including UFO photos, video and audio recordings, and metal samples. Horn feels that the presentation of any other UFO case is more like a UFOs 101 compared to the Meyer case that he feels is a graduate-level course. Horn thinks that presenting the evidence to students, teachers, and critical thinkers in an academic environment is more productive than presenting it at a UFO-oriented event where he would be preaching to the choir. Michael Horn's Billy Meyer multimedia presentation will be taking place at schools beginning in 2011.
Well, I wonder, he never mentions having actually scheduled a talk in a school. He says he's going to do it.
Says he's going to,
but I don't know if
but there
school...
hasn't been like a published schedule of
dates
where he's going.
So he's probably saying, I'll do this if, and I want to do this, and we'll see if anybody
generate
takes him
interest
up on it.
Yeah.
We'll see. Hopefully he can keep it cool because he can use bad words and get a little upset sometimes. So I've talked to him before. Mr. Horn, please watch your temper, you know, especially with the little guys. Mm-hmm. If one of them says they don't believe Billy Meyer, he's liable to go off on him and possibly make one of these little kids cry.
Well, that sounds like most of my college classes. Mainstream media is giving much more attention to the UFO subject lately. The recent press coverage at the National Press Club is just one example of mainstream media's covering UFO news. And the event was even streamed live by CNN. However, this new surge of media attention isn't all good. While the latest coverage has mostly been positive and presented in more of a serious and professional way than it has in the past, some of the reporting has been sloppy without research. A prime example of this frenzy of reporting surrounding the UFO sighting above the airports in China. There were countless news articles last week alone about the new UFO sighting over a Chinese airport, but the incident these stories were reporting was something that happened in the middle of September. Not a new incident, not timely reporting at all, but, you know, there were many blogs and websites that posted it because they were finding out about it late.
Many, 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 many. And it's unfortunate that it's great that they're covering UFOs and UFOs in China because there have been a lot of sightings. But it's unfortunate that so many of these people are covering the wrong information. I even saw one story that had taken the headlines many were using that UFO closes airport. There have been 8 sightings in China. And one said 8 UFO closures in China, which was completely wrong.
I mean,
this whole Chinese UFO thing mostly has had so much inaccurate reporting that it's really unfortunate in that sense.
And some of the main offenders have been some of the largest media sources.
Mm-hmm.
ABC News. I mean, the big guys.
Oh, right. And they're all getting it wrong.
Right.
What can you do?
Yeah.
Except for call them out. I tried to, you know, go to some of these sites and post something. But your comments get, you know, there's so many people commenting on these big sites especially that it just kind of gets one little comment out of thousands.
And I, you know, this brings it into attention, the just reporting in general. I wonder if you know, this is how the majority of the stories are reported by these organizations, or if the reporting done on UFOs, the UFO subject, if perhaps even though it's being given more attention, it's still being relegated to the lower tier reporters.
Yeah. Well, either that, yeah, and less effort being made
right.
on because they don't take it serious, unfortunately. And I haven't seen, you know, especially with the Chinese UFOs, I haven't seen many, if any, of these larger organizations covering it accurately besides some of the Chinese papers.
And a lot of these major sources are doing what, you know, tiny blogs do. You'll find the original source, and it looks like the major news sources are basically copying and pasting without doing any searching themselves.
Or the worst, like ABC and Fox News taking stuff from YouTube and saying that this is related when it's not.
Right.
It's anonymous YouTube videos.
But bottom line, there is more coverage on the subject, and overall I think that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, true.
That is it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed.
Thank you, Jason. Some of the cool stories that we have on the website, because we have some neat stuff there. UFO case files revealed, of course, is something that Michael Schratt, our aerospace historian, has been doing for a long time, and we're already on part five. But they're always very interesting because he takes QFOS cases, the Center for UFO S something. I can't remember right now. I'll look it up. Anyways, he takes these QFOS sightings reports, and he goes and he does some sketches and some AutoCAD type of things and generates these 3D sculptures on AutoCAD and then puts those in the area and just really cool pictures to give you an idea of the size and the geometry of these things that people had seen. Now, QFOS, the Center for UFO Studies, sorry about that little brain issue that I had a second ago, was started by Hynek, who was the astronomer who worked for the Air Force for Blue Book. And it's a very careful investigation group that was very conservative, did a lot of research around the sightings that were given to them. Essentially, they were a precursor to MUFON, who does that now. And so these sightings, you know, there were a lot of them that were brought to these guys. And what I find so interesting about Michael's stories about these QFOS sightings is the variety of the objects that are seen. And that's what's kind of exciting about these stories that Michael does, where he is able to, you know, show you them. A lot of the classic disc type of shape, but not all of them, you know, not all. He usually puts out three in each of these little snippets, and maybe one of them is a classic disc shape, but then the others are something completely different, just odd, strange shapes, which kind of lends to some of the theories out there that maybe there are very many civilizations that are visiting us right now. Another story that was an exclusive to Open Minds was Brazil's very first official UFO report in 1846, so quite some time ago. This was posted by Antonio, who had found this back some time ago. And as far as he knows, and our research shows, this story has not been shared in English media at all. And essentially, this is a guy who was on a ship, a very well-known, respected person, who wrote up this sighting from 1846 of this object that they saw, this bright light that kind of flew around their ship and flew off. So it's a really cool official report in Brazilian history from 1846. So that's got to be one of the oldest sighting reports ever out there. And I don't know if Jason had talked about this too. This was Australia story that we had posted, which was pretty interesting. And this is regarding these giant round inflatable discs that Australian company is going to possibly build that can lift huge amounts of weight and transport them. And they're even thinking about building this and making it so it can, you know, pick up buildings. You can build them in one place and have this balloon pick up this building and drop it off somewhere else. Pretty interesting. Another interesting aspect of this one is that some of the researchers out there think that the giant triangles could be this sort of thing. These giant, and it's been reported that the giant triangles are kind of a dirigible like this that can pick up a bunch of tanks and a bunch of troops and transport them because it can lift, you know, these massive amounts of weight. Who knows? There's other studies out there, including done by Bigelow Aerospace, where they looked into the black triangles and they didn't feel that was the case. They felt that these black triangles were something that were not man-made. Gary McKinnon actually did make a little bit of news also in that, you know, as we followed this whole Gary McKinnon story, the hacker from the UK who, you know, hacked into some government files after finding out about the Disclosure Project, trying to get information on UFOs. If you're interested in what he actually did find, really a story that we have on Open Minds, I think, has been the most thorough in that regard that I've seen out on the Internet. And we get a lot of people looking at that. But it's been a roller coaster ride for Gary because the government has gone back and forth on what they're going to do with him. If the UK is going to extradite him to the United States, where he'll be tried and go to many, many years of prison in the United States. And, you know, the British just think, wow, these primitive American prisons must be awful. And they probably are, you know, looking at TV. But they're finally what is possibly going to be the last judgment on whether or not they're going to extradite him is now expected to be coming in weeks, whereas they thought it might be months before they had decided on this. So it might come soon where we'll finally know what they're going to do. Of course, him and the people out there and all of the even stars out there who didn't want this to happen, you know, have been and trying to hold awareness type of meetings and things to keep him out in the UK. And that may happen. We'll see. One of the interesting things that I think has happened lately with the McKinnon story that the Prime Minister actually brought this up with Obama. And Obama said if he comes here that we will make sure that his punishment is something like a fair punishment, something like that, which doesn't really say much about what might happen to him. Of course, if he comes out here, we do hope that it'll be kind of a large story and it'll be one of these stories that, again, brings this subject into the spotlight. And one of the great people who has brought some credible and wonderful information into the spotlight on UFOs is retired Major George Filer. And I'm very excited to be talking to him this evening. And George, I believe you're on the line.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, how are you?
Fine.
Well, it's great to be talking to you. Like I had said earlier, you know, you are one of my favorite people on the Disclosure Project, not just because of what you had to say, but because your presence up there, you know, you seem just kind of a relaxed, fun person. And I know you like to keep things kind of fun.
Well, it's more fun being fun than it is being
otherwise
serious and everything.
Yeah. Well, let's start off. I kind of want to go historically because you've been involved with this field for a long time and there's a lot that's gone on. But let's start back in the UK when you were in the Air Force and you had your first incident in having to deal with a UFO.
Right. Well, we were flying tankers at the time, and we were told that they were not using fighters anymore to intercept the UFOs because they had a bad habit of not coming back. Matter of fact, we had gone out and searched for a fighter that disappeared in the North Atlantic. But in any case, they said that they might be using tankers and we might get called upon. Well, in any case, sure enough, couple of weeks later, we were up flying over the North Sea in a, basically in a circle doing refueling mission. The idea was that about the time the sun goes down, it frequently fogs in the airfields in the UK, and that any fighters that were airborne couldn't land, and they would have to be refueled to go to Spain or Germany or France or whatever. And we were up there kind of like a gas station in the air, you know, each night putting the fighters to bed, as we called it. And we just pretty much put them all to bed that night when we got a call from London Control, and they said that would we intercept an unidentified flying object? And we said, sure, that seems like it might be fun.
Right.
And it's more exciting than boring holes in the sky, so to speak. You know?
Right.
And we're about 32,000 feet, and they said it was about 1,000 feet over the Stonehenge, Oxford area. And they gave us headings, and we headed towards it, and we're doing about 350, 400 miles an hour and descending. And we're actually descending too fast to the red line on the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
We had to pull back on the power. In other words, you get excited chasing something, and basically you go too fast. And we picked it up on radar, and we had a huge radar return on about 50 miles. And in Scotland, or when you take off from the UK, one of the biggest radar returns is the Firth of Forth Bridge in Scotland. And this is about a mile-long bridge over this body of water, and it shows up long distances. And like 200 miles out, you can pick up this huge bridge. Well, the UFO showed up as a very similar radar return. In other words, a very large type craft off from the distance. And for a while we couldn't see it, although we had it on radar, and we're still descending and we're getting headings. And we got a few miles away, and you could see almost like a ship that you would see out at sea with all the lights.
Wow.
You know, like 30 lights in a row. We got about a mile to it, doing about 400 miles an hour, and all of a sudden it like kind of lit up. I don't know if you've ever seen the shuttle launch at Cape Canaveral, but it looked something like that and went straight up into space.
So it just got extremely bright and went straight up?
Right.
Wow.
Looked like I was doing, I'm guessing, you know, 4,000 miles an hour or something, 10, even 100 times faster than we could do. From almost a dead stop to go straight up. So that kind of made me a believer, so to speak, that there was something out there that was huge, something that had a strong radar return, and, you know, something that was real, that we could visually see, the whole crew saw it.
Uh-huh. What did you think of UFOs prior to this experience, or did you think anything about them at all?
Well, you know, I had read, you know, like Saga magazine and different magazines through the years, and you hear about other crews seeing them and that kind of thing. In other words, I thought that there was probably something there, but until you, you know, actually chase one, you're not really convinced, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, had you heard other accounts from other fellow pilots who had said they had seen something strange?
I've had quite a few, you know, other pilots tell me that they'd seen them. Before I was in England, I was stationed in Athens, Greece, and the ambassador's pilot had seen them in Korea and had one actually do like circles around it.
Wow.
And I like to mention that here in New Jersey on the East Coast, we're having a lot of rain. And I can hear thunder and lightning in the background, so it's kind of like an exciting time here. I'm mentioning that in case the lines go bad or something.
All right, well, there's always good to have some adventure, huh?
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that several crews got to chase them like we did, you know, the tankers. Mm-hmm. And we were invited to a dinner at the officers' club, and the speaker was Prince Philip. And Prince Philip gave his talk, and then just as he finished, said that he wanted to talk to the crews that had chased the UFOs. So about 10 of us sat down there and sounds funny, sat around the table with a cigar and talked about UFOs for an hour or so.
Really? Cool.
And he was very interested in them and, you know, said that he felt that they existed, that he had talked to many air crews, both British and, you know, American, that had seen them. And I asked him why he personally believed in them, and he said that his uncle, Earl Mountbatten, had seen them up close.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically he believed his uncle.
Wow.
You know, because he had been told that. And he does once in a while quote UFOs and is quoted, you know, in the papers and so on. Not too many people, you know, paid much attention, but he's always had that belief and stated it openly, you know, when asked.
It's funny you say that, because just before the show, I was editing looking over the final of a story I wrote about the UK UFO files that they've been releasing, and I had asked Nick Pope about the royal family's interest, and he did confirm they had an interest, but that he couldn't talk much about it. So it's interesting, though, that it seems the royal family really has an interest in this sort of thing.
Supposedly the sons are quite interested, and they have taken, you know, they take UFO magazines and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they have filers' files or not, but
yeah, hopefully. Now, that's one thing that you mentioned, too, about your sighting, which happens often. And as you mentioned, you do filers' files, so you collect a lot of UFO sightings. And it seems fairly common where, you know, people come across a craft, especially pilots or even ground sightings, where there's a craft sitting there and it gets extremely bright before it shoots off at extreme speed into the sky.
Yeah, and I think it's part of the propulsion system in some way. But I don't think they're rockets, you know.
Right.
They have some other system, probably, anti-gravity, that kind of thing, electromagnetic.
Yeah.
They seem to have a great deal of electromagnetic strength to them, and they've been measured to be as powerful as a power plant, you know.
Yeah, very powerful.
Very large.
Well, now let's move on to later on in your Air Force career, another exciting event where there was an experience where you were told, and I don't know how much you personally saw it. I don't think much in this situation, but you can tell us that now. An alien was actually shot on the tarmac at the base next. No, it was shot at Fort Dix, right?
Yes.
So could you explain, like, you know,
that's what I was told.
How that day happened, you know, what that day was like when you came to work?
Yes, well, I was a deputy director of intelligence for 21st Air Force, and my job was pretty much briefing the general staff every morning on, you know, what was going on in the world, particularly our half of the world, where our military aircraft were flying, well, from the president and high-ranking persons all over the world, but from basically from Mississippi River to India was our half of the world, so to speak. So we were briefed mostly on that. Well, in any case, I came to work about 4 o'clock this one morning, and I noticed a lot of red lights out on the end of the runway. I actually thought that maybe a plane had crashed or something. And when I got into the command post, the head of the command post came up to me and said that they had shot a alien at Fort Dix. Now, Fort Dix and McGuire are right together. There's just a fence between the two. So, and I said, when they said an alien, I said, a foreigner from another country, that kind of thing. And they said, no, this is an alien from space, which is hard, for me to believe. Even though I'd seen UFOs, I didn't think of, the alien, so to speak. And they said that at the 8 o'clock briefing, and there's about 50 people come to the briefings, that we want you to brief about the alien being shot at Fort Dix, and it had come across from Fort Dix to McGuire and was found dead on the end of the runway, and that somebody was our security police were out there guarding it right now, and that a plane was coming in. I actually said a C-141 was coming in from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to pick it up.
Wow.
And now I was a little concerned to brief General Sadler about this because didn't have a real good sense of humor. And I wanted to check it out, so I did call the security police, the desk sergeant, and the 438th Military Airlift Wing command post, and both confirmed pretty much the story as being that being true, at least at this time in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and that the plane was on the way and apparently it landed and this kind of thing. I would be kept up to date of what was happening because the command post basically controls all the planes all over the half the world, so to speak. About 500 planes, I think, we had at the time.
Wow.
And so this was treated as a very serious situation, that this alien was there. And now I didn't go out onto the end of the runway and look at him and so on.
Did you feel, were you compelled to go look, or? Was that just not
that
protocol, or?
Normally you need a military vehicle to go out there anyhow. You just don't go out there in your private vehicle. Out on the runway, you need lights and all that kind of thing. So I didn't think really much about going out there, but I must say that I did not see, an alien. I only know what people told me, and later on, actually, I talked to one of the sergeants who was out there guarding the alien, and he said that, he didn't know for certainly what it was, but it certainly didn't look human.
Wow. What did he say? Did he give you any details of what it looked like?
Yeah, basically, the description matched pretty much what people talk about, grays, four and a half feet tall and large head and so on. In a look to him, he didn't get real close, but, from a distance, it looked like had some kind of a flight suit on. It was kind of wondering why he'd left the Army, so to speak, and ran over to the Air Force, but which may be a clue to something that's going on that we're friendlier. Air Force is friendlier than the Army with aliens.
Hoping that you all were less trigger happy.
Right. In any case, he wasn't out there very long when a whole group of men came along, all dressed in black outfits, and somebody said, "Take off, buddy. that we've got the situation now. And he was, the reason he was talking to me basically was that he felt kind of bad that they had, you still there?
Yeah, still here.
We just had a real big flash of lightning and TV and computers and everything went out. All the lights went out.
Oh, really? I could hear that. That was a very weird sound, kind of like this whipping sound
right.
was on the phone. Oh, man. So are you still in the dark?
I'm sitting in the dark talking to you.
Oh, no. Hopefully you're not afraid of the dark.
No, I'm not afraid of the dark. There's a lot of lightning outside, so it's
wow.
kind of exciting here.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of rain and lightning lately.
Well, hopefully this line will keep up.
Right. Well, in any case, everybody who I talked to that knew something about it was almost immediately transferred. And only, you know, only 10, 15 people on the base knew something about it, and they were transferred or retired almost right away. This was in January 18th, 1978. So that's a good indication that something is real when everybody gets transferred.
Right.
You know, some people have said, well, it was a deer on the runway. Well, they don't usually transfer colonels and everything after...
after a deer sighting?
Right. Because there's plenty of those out on the runways.
Did you get any description or talk to anyone who described the craft? And this craft had actually landed at Fort Dix?
Well, I never actually talked to the Army military policeman, but I got the impression that it was a disc and that there was something like 10 of these discs in the pattern, you know, flying around and actually acting very excited and, like, apparently trying to get their, you know, their alien back, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Many UFOs were reported in the sky, and I also talked to a tower operator who was there that night, and he saw the UFOs.
Wow.
Now, so I have, when I say confirmation, but most of these people obviously want their names kept quiet. At the
right. Well, since then I've heard, and I didn't know much about this before, but there are other witnesses. There's someone, David Waxesbear, it's someone we had on the show, and he had... I guess, written about a couple other witnesses to this event that he had talked with?
No, I'd like to talk with him.
Okay, so you weren't aware of that.
Now, well, I have heard that there was other witnesses because,
right.
you know, the full base of
right.
several thousand people there that some would know about it. There was other security police that were guarding the body, so to speak, and there was the C-141 crew that came in to pick up the body, and then there was a special team that showed up, and in other words, there was probably, I don't know, 25 or more witnesses, and then there would be, you know, the I was told that like an ambulance came out there and, you know, fire trucks. And this, in other words, there was other people around but not, you know, really close.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only those that apparently were right on the scene that were actually transferred or those like myself who, you know, knew about it.
You were transferred also.
Yes.
What? When did you finally retire from the Air Force?
Well, that's when I retired, actually.
Oh, really? At that time?
Right.
So, and then you were so inspired about what had happened. At some point, when did you join MUFON and then start your filers files?
Oh, I actually started my filers files in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
January 1997. And I was Well, I had been in MUFON for quite a while and became the Eastern Director of MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that our field investigators needed to know more what was going on.
Right.
And I frequently wrote, you know, intelligence reports in the Air Force, that this was kind of like the same type of thing, only having to do with the UFOs, you know, and who believes in them and what we know about them and so on.
Right. When you first came to MUFON and you started, did you immediately share, you know, your experiences at McGuire with people, and how did they take that?
Well, I told the state director of New Jersey, who was Tom Benson at the time, about it. And, you know, kind of let the information that I had be known to people.
Yep. And did they look at you funny, or did it seem like they really believed you?
Well, they had heard about it. This fellow that we call Sergeant Morris had been on a radio program and had kind of like released the information, you might say, worldwide. And the story was known, at least among the people in UFOs, and I was just there, so to speak, confirming what he said, at least what I was told.
Gotcha.
I was not a... you know, witness to the alien. I was just being told pretty much what he was telling everybody else.
Gotcha. So there is this guy, Sergeant Morris, or is that kind of like an anonymous name?
Yeah, that's not his real name.
Okay. And he had already come out talking about this event.
Right. He met with Richard Hall and Bruce McAbee.
I see.
Others and had told his story, you might say, firsthand.
And what was his role? Was he in the Army?
No, he was in the Air Force.
Okay.
And, you might say, patrolling that night when he was told that... actually, he was told to let the state police in, who were also tracking the alien from Fort Dix. And he let a state policeman on the base, and they went out and searched the end of the runway and, you know, in their respective cars and lights and so on. They actually found the body out there. And then when they found it, they said it would be best that the state police be, you know, removed from the base, so to speak.
Yeah.
Asked to leave, that it was not a state problem, or it was a Air Force problem.
Right. So Sergeant Morris, and this is someone, are you aware of this person's real identity? Not that I'm going to ask you.
Yes, I have it.
Okay.
I've talked to him on the phone several times.
Oh, I see. Wow, that's really interesting. I've always been really interested in this, but of course, this case I heard first from you, and really, you know, as far as information out there, I think I had come across the Sergeant Morris thing, but most of what I knew about this situation was from you, until I had David Waxesbear on the show, who talked somewhat more about this, and then he had mentioned the Sergeant Morris, which is all really interesting. I mean, it's an incredible situation, of course. And then the being was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, have you talked with other people who, because I know by now that you've been in this field for so long and you've done so much research and talked with so many people, have you talked with people at Wright-Patterson who have had involvement with any of this that have felt, you know, shared this information with you?
Well, most of them just say they've heard rumors that, you know, there's things on the base. And I have talked to, well, I was worked with this Air Victory Museum, and, for example, one of the fellows that was there was at one time a pilot flying in and out of Wright-Patterson, and he said that he saw this shape aircraft on the runway taxiing around. In other words, a UFO. So he didn't know what it was exactly. I bet that it looked like a disc, you know. Could be one of theirs or one of ours.
Gotcha. Wow.
And a lot of people thousands of people see UFOs and discs on a regular basis between MUFON and National Reporting Center. You know, we get 1,000 UFO reports a month.
Right.
So a lot of people are seeing something flying around out there.
Mm-hmm. So which is now what you're into. You've been collecting these reports and sharing them with people over email for quite some time now, 13 years?
Right.
And have you seen, as far as when these reports, have you seen trends that you've recognized that you think are important?
Oh, there are some trends, like seems like we're seeing less discs, less of them landing, you know, and the reports of them actually sitting down on the ground. It seems like we're getting more reports, more generalized reports, probably more triangles. Most of the triangles used to be from Europe, you know, England and Belgium and even Russia, and now we get a lot of the triangles. I don't know if there, and there just seems to be more reports now. If that's, we don't know if that's because more people have the internet, more people then turn around and, you know, report it.
Yeah, we have in our latest magazine, actually, the fifth one that we're writing at, we have a story on the Belgium flap, of course, which is interesting. And Leslie Keene mentioned that in her book, that just came out, that hit the bestseller. And speaking of, you know, like Leslie Keene's book, what have you seen as far as media trends and their attitudes towards this subject over the years you've been looking at this?
Well, when we were in Washington at the National Press Club with the Disclosure Project, and about 25 of us spoke, and even then I had many reporters coming up to me and saying that, you know, basically they believed in UFOs, if you want to use that word. But that when they would write an article, they couldn't get it published. In other words, they'd write it and give it to the people. But now it seems like more articles are being published.
Yeah.
And in other words, there's a little bit of change of opinion about UFOs, that they, you know, they, at least they might be real as the concept now more than in the past.
Were you surprised by the lack of coverage of the Disclosure Project event?
Yes. But it almost seemed like there was government news developed at the time to cover what was going on. Now, it might have been by accidental, but there were a lot of announcements by the government at that time.
See, that to me was definitely shocking. I mean, I was a news hound at the time, paying attention to everything going on because I was a journalism major, and I was a real big news hound at the time. And that's what really got me into this stuff. I was shocked at the lack of coverage when you have, you know, these 25 people with impeccable credentials, such as yourself, coming up and sharing this at a packed house at the National Press Club, and then just almost like this blackout. There's barely any tiny little pieces of information that came out from that. That, to me, was shocking.
Yes. I don't know how that happens exactly, but the reporters, frankly, said that their editors didn't feel that that was news.
Wow.
And now the editors, some of these reporters are becoming editors, and they think it's news now.
Yeah.
And I think there's a little better coverage today than there was then. Now, there was tremendous coverage back in the 50s, you know.
Yeah.
But it kind of went away. And I think that was a deliberate plan in that people who saw UFOs were kind of, you know, indicated that they were crazy or
right.
not wrapped very tightly or
right.
silly or drunk or something, you know.
Yeah.
And now it's people like, you know, astronaut Edgar Mitchell and different astronauts are coming forward saying that they've seen them and chased them, and many, you know, many military and the fact that I think, you know, various countries are releasing a lot of this data, Mexico, Brazil, France, England, Denmark, and so on, that there's some, you know, evidence that they are, in fact, there.
Right. Now, was it a packed house at that press conference for disclosure?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Just like
there's, I don't know, 150 news media there. It was interesting that right afterward I was interviewed by, I think it was BBC and some South American company, TV, that a lot of nations television are very interested in this, you know, Japanese and
right.
yeah, I had Japanese and I think it was Chile and a couple other countries actually come to my house and interview me.
Wow.
That they, the Japanese television program said it was the highest rated television program in Japan.
Holy cow.
You know, and your show is helping to get the word out, so to speak, that there is something real to all this, and that at the very least we should look at it scientifically. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it's always possible that, you know, we're mistaken in what we see as, you know, some kind of natural phenomenon or something, but it certainly doesn't look like it. I mean, it looked like a spaceship to me, and certainly showed that on the radar and so on.
Yeah, when they land and get out of the craft and then they're shot at and they die on the end of a tarmac, that would be certainly a new kind of natural phenomena.
That I think it's an important situation that,
yeah.
I mean, you know, they spend millions of dollars studying some, you know, butterflies or whatever. Not that butterflies aren't important, but at least as far as our government's concerned, at least they don't admit to spending any money to investigate this in a way that it should be done.
Right. Yeah, you know. Go ahead.
Oh, they certainly show that they have, you know, vast abilities. And we get people claiming to be, you know, healed after abductions and so on. In other words, they have advanced technology that...
certainly stuff
point energy and all this kind of thing that I would think that we would be able to use at least sometime in the future.
Right. Right. Hopefully, if that's been recovered, which it sounds like it has, which reminds me, the quote, the disc that landed at Fort Dix, do you know, I think, did it then take off and leave? Or do you know if this thing was recovered?
Well, I don't know for certain. I do know that the supposedly a team came in and spent several weeks cleaning up, as they said.
Hmm.
And that the base, that road that went through Fort Dix was closed every night for several weeks, which would indicate they're doing some kind of work there at night, but you know, that I've never run into anyone who said they saw a craft or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Although people did say that they had seen bulldozers and that kind of thing working at night.
Hmm. So you guys are looking over there saying, what are those crazy army guys up to?
But, well, I've talked to friends who were generals or, you know, and various people, and everybody's heard the rumors, but at least no one I've found is, you know, at least will admit to seeing anything up front.
Gotcha.
Of course, now as time goes on, just like Roswell, you know, people tend to start talking more, so that we'll probably start running into people.
Yeah.
I did have one guy that, for example, that was in the communications, claim that he had seen messages to the effect that the alien was there, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's apparent that, you know, they certainly... There are people that know a lot more about what's going on and who our visitors may be.
I'd love to talk to them.
Yeah. So how were you approached to become part of the Disclosure Project?
Well, Stephen Greer called me and basically asked if I would be interested in, you know, being part of it. And I said, sure, but I felt it was important for the, you know, the public to know about it. At least I don't know of anything that is so terrible that the public can't know. I think, you know, millions of people have seen UFOs and
mm-hmm.
realize that something's there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. Like you said, with thousands of reports coming in, on a monthly basis, you know, those are the people who know there is someone to contact to even tell them that there's a UFO, let alone the number of people out there who didn't know that MUFON or New Fork were there or didn't even care to look to report their sighting, which is probably the majority of sightings.
Right, and what we're getting recently is, you know, the new cameras that people have, you know, they can take a picture of the sky and way off in the distance they see a little dot, you know. Well, you can blow that up on your computer and we're finding a lot of UFOs in pictures taken in, you know, it's usually off in the distance. People usually don't even see it, but they, with the new cameras, they can bring them in and magnify the picture and see the UFOs. We're getting a lot of those that people are sending me that I actually put in my files.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm happy to send my weekly intelligence report to anyone out there listening. All they have to do is write majorstar@verizon.net. majorstar@verizon.net. It's free.
I'd recommend people do that too. majorstar@verizon.net, where you could get Filer's files, and he'll email those out. You email them out on a weekly basis and give people a bunch of information about sightings and news and different things going on.
Yeah, there's no. It's like 20 pages long, and I spend most of my time whittling it down from 40 to 20. You know, there's
wow.
a tremendous amount of news every week.
Right.
And I don't put in all the sightings, obviously, just some of the better ones. You know, usually I have about 20 pictures of UFOs. You know, they're not the greatest because it's usually off in the distance, but it does show you that week after week, whether it's from China or Chile or UK or around the United States, Canada, and Mexico, that people are taking photos of unidentified flying objects on a regular basis. And there's something out there flying around, and we got to find out what it is. You know.
Yeah, what the heck is up with those UFOs? So, what are some of the more exciting stories that you've come across lately?
Oh, I had a lady call me just a couple of days ago who had won, I wouldn't use the word land, but one hover, a disc about 25 feet in diameter with alternating lights going around it. And it was kind of moving in, I think it was a clockwise direction, just sitting there just a few feet away from her. That she could, throw a ball at it and hit it. It was that close. And she said she wouldn't have believed it, but her mother was there, who doesn't believe in any of these kind of things. And they were both convinced that they were seeing a UFO. I mean, it was there very close. And we usually don't get them, that close to people.
Right.
They do come in on a fairly regular basis. Matter of fact, I'm meeting with a fellow Friday who also has a similar close-up sighting in New Jersey. We get, about 25 sightings a week in New Jersey. I'm also the state UFON director in New Jersey. And they're pretty much spread around the country. California probably gets the most, and then Pennsylvania. You know, New Mexico, Arizona, all that area obviously gets many.
Right.
On a regular basis. I guess I don't know if you see them out there, but...
Yep, some people see them out here. Unfortunately, I haven't seen any yet in Arizona, but some of my coworkers have. In fact, one of my coworkers saw the Phoenix Lights.
Is that right?
Yeah, so that's always exciting. I'm amazed at the number of people who have seen them out here.
Well, it helps if you have a, large sky.
Yeah.
Like I live in the woods, and a lot of deer and on the lake and so on, but I can't see much of the sky because of all the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts in your... seeing the UFOs. Well, in the summer, we usually go down to the shore, the New Jersey shore in Surf City, and then you have this huge expanse of the ocean out there. Matter of fact, my wife just got a beautiful picture of a rainbow filling up the whole ocean, so to speak. Matter of fact, it was in my files a couple weeks ago. Didn't have a UFO in it, although there is something that might have been a UFO way off in the distance, but I didn't climb that.
Right. So when it comes to disclosure, what a lot of people talking about that happening and hoping that it happens, I guess what are your ideas around why this information is hidden and if you think it'll be shared?
I don't see the President of the United States standing up, one day and announcing it to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see them, releasing certain files and more people, discussing it. And I've had like two firms called me and they were interested in doing a movie, As a matter of fact, one today, in other words, they're asking for help, telling them where the sightings are and that kind of thing. My point is that a lot of people are thinking of bringing out movies or, TV shows, that kind of thing. That you guys are fairly new in the business, so to speak, and in other words, people realize that there's something going on and they want to let the public know. And that's my goal as well, is to bring out the information to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also in the Air Force Association, and consequently, I, you know, meet a lot of generals and stuff, and they all seem to have a, you might say, a good attitude about it, that, that they like to have the information come out, and their crews see UFOs on a regular basis, and it's kind of an open book kind of thing. I don't know if they'll ever, you know, release the bodies and all that kind of thing, but I think that there's a more of an open attitude that I see coming along.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so that's interesting. So some of your colleagues who still are in the Air Force are pretty open about talking about the subject, Tom.
Yes, we get reports from, you know, Army, Navy, and Air Force people, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't want who they are mentioned, so to speak, but
right.
They are seeing them, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan and all over the world, frankly.
Yeah. I did a talk at a Kiwanis. It's kind of interesting. It reminds me of, and, you know, this was the town leaders and stuff in a suburb of Denver. And at the end of the meeting, I was handing out some information forms, and it was about UFOs. And some people were open to getting some information, but there's a table of men, and one guy had told me, you know, that guy over at that table, and he pointed it out, you need to talk to him. So I go to this table and ask if they want information, and they look at me funny, and they're like, no, no. And so I said, well, you, the gentleman over there told me that you have a story related to all of this. And he was probably one of the older gentlemen in the room. He was definitely well into his 80s. And he says, oh, yeah, when I was in the Air Force, I had to keep track of those damn things. And so then everybody at the table is like, sure, I'll take some information. Yeah, I want some more information. They were all really shocked about this guy, you know, ex-Air Force, admitting that having involvement.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, but every Air Force base had their own UFO officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the privilege, you might call it, but the ability to launch aircraft to chase them. And,
wow.
And a lot of times it would be a captain or a major or whatever, but they would check with him first, you know, before they would launch the planes rather than the base commander. I guess sometimes a base commander or wing commander would get into the permission to launch as well, but frequently it was just the UFO officer. And I point that out because they didn't have a, you know, an angel officer or a fairy officer or any of this.
Right. The tooth fairy officer.
You know, the point being is that the Air Force took it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I always saw it that way, and I never, now everybody didn't see them, of course, you know. I mean, I have, you know, a neighbor that's got 15,000 hours as a commercial airline pilot, and he's never seen one, you know, but that doesn't mean they don't exist.
Right. Because the Lord knows there's a lot of pilots out there, including yourself, who has seen them.
Right. But,
well, you get a lot of reports from pilots yourself, or a
sure.
MUFON and New Fork do.
Right. It's funny, we get a lot of pilot reports who see them when they're on the ground rather than flying.
Yeah.
But also, what's not generally realized is that, well, sometimes, you know, they'll fly with an aircraft, but usually they're very close to the ground. And they seem to be, you know, conducting reconnaissance on the ground or picking up people or whatever. In other words, they're right in the trees. And we found that a lot of times they're right around, for example, Philadelphia Airport, but people are used to the planes flying over, and they don't even look up. And some of those are UFOs. And
mm-hmm.
We've had cases where people would watch them, you know, like you might be a UFO about 20 feet above the trees, and a plane would come by and it would settle into the trees. And then when the plane would go by, it would come out of the trees. That's, in other words, they seem to be often around airports, closer than you might imagine, and you know, doing their work, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas or suspicions around motives on why they may be here?
Well, what I saw appeared to be, you know, a craft from somewhere else, in other words, another planet.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, bigger than anything I'd ever seen in the air. And consequently, I've always started out that they're most likely from another, you know, planet somewhere in the solar system. Now there's some 400 planets, you know, outside of our solar system in the universe. They just found one that was, you know, about the size of Earth and could have water on it and so on. In other words, it made a nice twin to Earth, consequently, that there could be life on that planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, I think it was 20 light years away, but in any case, it was in reasonable travel distance. You know, even though that sounds like a long way away,
right?
They apparently have the ability to travel. I was listening to Edgar Mitchell Tuesday night, and he gave an example that his, I think it was his grandfather, came to Roswell, New Mexico, you know, on horseback, you know, caravan, the old wagon train, and that within 100 years, he was walking on the moon.
Right.
Now, that was within 100 years, man, went from basically traveling on horses to, and this would be really before trains and stuff, to being on the moon. And, you know, where are we going to be in 100 years? In other words, our ability to travel at high speed may not make the trip, you know, to closer planets, not that far away.
Right. Right.
You know, go ahead.
It seems to be kind of the issue that, you know, you can see with some of the conventional scientists that they have a hard time thinking out of the box, so to speak, and their box doesn't seem to expand very far unless they're theoretical, you know, like the theoretical physicists, of course, they think there's no problem. We're definitely going to be able to break the speed of light at some time. But the astronomers and things, you know, they talk a lot about their different ideas of what might be going on, and their ideas aren't too imaginative.
Well, you look through a telescope, it certainly looks like there's, you know, billions of stars out there, and now we're getting stars with, you know, six and eight planets around them, and some the size of Earth. There's eight. It's probably literally billions of Earths out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems logical that, well, I happen to be a Christian. I believe that God can put life anywhere, you know, but and it seems like a logical thing to do, even if it's a natural thing that Johnny Weissmuller, so to speak, or Johnny Appleseed, you know, putting life in all the planting apples all over the country. Well, I think there's somebody planting life all over the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of our stories on the Vatican and its history, you know, Antonio had written about a Jesuit priest from hundreds of years ago who, you know, theorized just that, which was pretty groundbreaking, was that all of these stars are probably suns like ours, and they probably have planets, and most likely many of them have people on them just like ours does, which seems to be a perfectly logical assumption.
Now, one thing is we had a sighting up in Cataract, New Jersey, near Newark,
mm-hmm.
And one of the chief witnesses was a Monsignor,
mm-hmm.
And who happened to also be a pilot, and he saw it, you know, you might say up close, fly over.
Wow!
And he was like the priest for the police, and the police had taken pictures of it. And
wow.
And I interviewed him, you know, on camera and so on. Interestingly enough, BBC wanted the film. But, and what I find very interesting that frequently BBC or other countries will want what we're finding, but our own news media doesn't seem to care.
Right.
But in any case, he was saying that his friend worked at the Vatican, and that they have a tremendous amount of information on UFOs, more than you would be, you know, you might say believe. Mm-hmm. And there's indications that the, you know, the Vatican is putting out announcements periodically, you know, that well, they would like to baptize the aliens, and that
right.
likely out there, and so on. Little remarks indicating that they believe in at least some of the priests and some of the high ranking cardinals and so on believe that you know, quite likely we're being visited. That fairly far advanced compared to many places.
Yeah, very much. I mean, especially military or other things, even media. I mean, just recently the Jesuits had another astrobiological meeting where they were talking about this. And I guess from what I heard, that they were actually talking about, you know, the contact, when contact happens, and who will represent humanity, and the idea of protocols needed for that sort of thing.
Yes, and then supposedly the United Nations is getting into it. That there's a loosening up of the knowledge about UFOs and aliens and all this on a regular basis now. You know, it may be something we don't understand. That all through history there's been, you know, angels and demons and fairies and all these kind of things. But I have a hunch that we're talking about the same thing. We're not... you know, may be clear in our descriptions, but a scientist might describe somebody who's evil in one way, you know, as a demon. Somebody describes an alien doing abductions in a similar way. You know,
mm-hmm.
In other words, it's hard to be specific. On the other hand, I get people who claim to be abducted and been healed of diseases and the like,
right?
So you could easily describe that as, you know, as an angel coming from heaven, so to speak. In other words, there's a lot of possibilities going on that I'm not sure we understand yet.
Mm-hmm.
Won't until they come clean, so to speak.
Right. All right. We are out of time, and are your lights back on?
I'm still sitting here in the dark.
Oh,
actually,
no.
My wife brought in a candle. But,
oh, good. Has the lightning stopped, or is it still going?
Well, the storm is moving away, but I still see flashes, you know.
Yeah.
It moved from one side of the house to the other, actually.
Well, thank you for being on the show. Hopefully you get your lights on soon here, and you don't have to wait too long. You're probably going to bed anyway, huh?
Well, pretty soon, yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and you'll be at the UFO Congress also in a few months here.
Right.
So that's going
to
be a lot of fun.
I look forward to it.
Yep, so do I. So if you want to meet George Beiler here, come to the conference. Also remember, majorstar@verizon.net to go subscribe to his newsletter. We are out of time on Open Minds Radio. Remember, we have Paul Hellyer, an ex-minister of defense for a major country. How cool is that? Next week, thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio, your UFO news authority. Talk to you later.